Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Sapan Guy, CCO of Sovereign Metals. Welcome back, Sapan.
Thanks for having me, Phil. Great to be here.
Yeah, have you had a good summer so far?
It's been a busy summer. I think today's RNS probably culminates in a lot of that busyness. As you know, we've been doing the whole pilot phase as part of the optimization. So, you know, even though August, most people are on the beach, we've continued smashing out those RNSs and letting everyone know all the good stuff that we're doing.
Very good. Yeah. So obviously you're alluding to the fact that the company announced or reported impressive results from the Cassia graphite concentrate, which has proven to be an outstanding feedstock for high performance natural graphite anode materials used in lithium ion batteries. The high quality coated spherical purified graphite CSPG produced from Cassia matches the performance of leading Chinese manufacturers, boasting first cycle efficiencies between 94.2% and 95.8% and discharge capacities over 360 milliampere hours per gram. With its high purity, near perfect crystallinity and low impurity levels, Cassia offers a cost competitive alternative to Chinese graphite. I guess this potentially means Sovereign is what, sort of one step closer to becoming a dominant supplier of premium cost-competitive natural graphite?
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Another way of putting it is what one of our investors called me up to tell me about this morning and said that they've put Sovereign in the category of category killer within the graphite industry. He's basically saying we are to graphite what Walmart is to the retail business in the US, right? So
you are kryptonite, I think. You're trying to tell us you're Superman.
Look, I think the gloves are off now with this RNS. We knew that Cassia would work in a battery. We just didn't know how well. And the fact that it, you know, is just as good as, if not better than, the standard graphite that ends up in your Fords and your other electric vehicles, right? We were extremely happy with that. We're now in a position where we can tell the market Sovereign is going to be the largest and lowest cost producer of graphite. We're going to do it at the lowest carbon footprint, and that graphite is going to end up in the lithium ion battery sector.
Yeah. So I know you've had previous RNSs where you've gone, you know, in Germany, I think there was where they were testing this, the graphite. So is this presumably the last sort of RNS in the puzzle for the qualities, or is there going to be more further tests ongoing?
Yeah, it is. Look, what we'll do now is take this graphite, give it to future customers, off-takers, etc. Let them do what they want with it, what they would do with our product if they were to buy it from us in the future, and come back and let us know just how good it is, essentially. Look, there's a number of hurdles that graphite has to get over from being in the ground to being in an electric vehicle or in a battery. And we have shown this year that we have matched and surpassed those hurdles every time. The purification, the spheronization, the coating, and now the electrochemical testing. The part that is probably missing, which we're working on now, is the continuous production of this graphite. And that will be something that comes out from this pilot phase that we're conducting on the ground.
Yeah. So let's just drill down into that number, because I've sort of wondered what it means, this milliampere hours per gram. So what I can gather is that it's a measurement of the specific capacity, which indicates how much electrical charge, which is quoted in milliampere hours, which can be stored per gram of material. So a higher specific capacity means the material can effectively store more energy. Is that a fair summation?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, like, what are the questions that you want to ask about a battery? Is it going to charge up? Is it going to dissipate energy? Is it going to do that over a long period of time? And how much of that energy is it going to dissipate? Essentially, that's what this workup is. So all this, you know, PhD level electrochemistry that we've put in the RNS, just breaking that down, right? So the first cycle efficiencies of 94.2 to 95.8%, that just means that we will have a long battery life, right? That's what you've got to take away from that. The initial discharge capacities means that we have a battery that will provide high levels of energy output, right?
Low gram though, which means it's more efficient in the sense that you can hold more store per gram, right?
Correct. And then in terms of this BET specific surface areas, in essence, what happens when you first charge up a battery is those lithium particles attach themselves to the anode where they travel to, and they essentially get coated. And when that happens in a battery, that lithium is no longer available to as useful charging ions. So essentially, the less surface area you have and the less coated material you have, the more lithium you have available to actually hold the charge. And that's what we've shown with that surface area. So basically what we're saying is we would have a battery with a higher capacity.
So Tapan, I mean, the graphite really is it's wrong to say a waste product, but it is a waste product of the main deal here in your titanium oxide, no?
Yeah, it's a byproduct. I mean, look, we're a rutile mine, and it just so happens that we will, while we're producing, rutile at the lowest cost possible, we'll be producing the highest amounts of graphite in the world at the lowest cost possible, right? So it's a nice waste material, if you want to call it, to have. And now we've found an end use for it as well. We've basically qualified our graphite for that end use.
So do you think it's going to give you some sort of pricing power in terms of the ability to sell this because of the costs of most graphite producers?
It's always dangerous talking about, kind of pricing power in these up and coming industries. And for us, what's key is that we are the lowest cost producer. So wherever that price of graphite ends up at, even at today's kind of prices, which are way off what the long-term prices are, we'd still be making a 10.5 of gross profit. At $182 a ton, the nearest competitor is around $400 a ton in terms of operating costs. So, and we're talking about $182 a ton of graphite sat on a boat ready to be shipped anywhere in the world.
And from a percentage point of view, what is the profit margin if you were to ship it today? And what is the basket price for the graphite?
Look, so your fines, so your small graphite sells for maybe about $450 a ton, $500 a ton. Your top end, $2,000 a ton. But that top end is such a small market, so we're not massively concerned about that. Even if you call it $500 a ton, and we're producing at 182, that you work it out yourself. That's quite a nice healthy margin. It's not as great as if it was, 1,000, but it works for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, do you see that the market is going to gather pace in terms of people's requirement for the graphite over the coming years? Or as some people have said, the electric market stroke these type of batteries ultimately slowing down as in people's expectations of how quickly they're going to be taken up?
I think the take up of electric vehicles comes down to two things. Number one, cost, and number two, this whole range anxiety that consumers have. The key driver is less about the consumer requirements right now, and it's more about the policymakers and the policies driving decarbonization, driving electrification of the global vehicle fleet. So even if we're not all sitting in cars as consumers, you can your bottom dollar, public transport, logistics companies will be using lithium-ion batteries as a means of getting from point A to point B.
Tell me then, Sapan, how do you think that this graphite situation will affect the overall net present value of the project? Is it going to be a major positive? Has it been included before? Is it not included before? How is this going to affect?
The net present value that you're probably alluding to is that of the pre-feasibility study that was out in September last year of 1.6 billion post-tax, 2.3 billion pre-tax. There's a lot of moving parts since then, right? There's not just the fiscal side of stuff, but there's the actual commodity prices. But most importantly is all the information we're learning with this optimization phase, with this pilot mine. We're learning different ways to mine it, mine cassia. We're understanding different ways to process cassia. making things actually a lot simpler. Now, I don't want to hazard a guess in terms of what that means for OPEX and CAPEX, but it is an optimization study. We're trying to optimize both the operations and the economics of it. So we'll have those answers probably towards the end of October, early November for the market. But until then, we just continue with the work on the ground.
Okay, so Sapan, do you want to give us an update on how things are going at the pilot plant, please?
Yeah, so we completed the dry mining a few weeks ago. We've commenced hydro mining there. As you remember, the pre-feasibility study was 100% hydro. One of the key factors that we've been looking at is there a sweet spot combination of dry and hydro here? So the fact that we know that it can be dry mined, we are getting to a point of understanding what the hydro mining would look like. We'll have, you know, we'll hopefully be able to solve that problem in short order. Then, of course, if you've gone onto our socials recently, you saw that our spiral plant was delivered a few weeks ago. So that's being installed and commissioned. That should be up and running hopefully in the next couple of weeks. And we should be able to announce that to the market. And we'll be putting through the material that has been stockpiled at the test pit through that spiral plant and see what it does. And if all goes to plan as it has done on a bench scale, then on a pilot scale, it should follow suit. And we should have some product on the back end, both graphite and rutile, at which point we'd then put that process material back into the pit, as well as material that was just mined and then put back to better understand the rehabilitation, the tailings, the revegetation. You know, one of the key things we want to do with this pilot is A, understand, and B, demonstrate to local communities that once we've mined a specific area, we've taken the rutile out, we've taken the graphite out, we've put everything else back where it was, that the vegetation properties, you know, this is farmland, this is subsistence farming land. So we want to make sure that the local communities understand that that land, it will be just as good as, if not better, quality for farming than when we first mined it.
Yeah. And how supportive are the sort of locals and the farmers when you're out there? What is the feeling towards the staff of Sorrel? I know there's been a lot of pieces where you've done a lot of work with the locals, with the farmers, etc. And so just talk us through the kind of the atmosphere you get from them.
Yeah, so two things we did earlier this year. We brought on board an ESG officer, and that's Marco de Cunha. He was one of the ESG leads for Rio Tinto at the Simandou iron ore project in Guinea. Kasia is by no means the size and scale of Simandou, which is like Africa's largest mining and infrastructure project, full stop. But having that expertise has been very helpful. The other thing we did was we brought on a social team, and that's the same team that helped do a lot of the social and community work for First Quantum in Zambia and for Randgold in the DRC. So they're veterans at it. They know what they're doing. They are, you know, tier one guys for this tier one project. They've already introduced conservation farming programs for those farmers whose land we will be mining on. And we've already shown that we can provide them with enough training that we can triple, quadruple, quintuple their crop yields. So they're pretty happy with what we've shown them so far.
And there's also been upgrades to the railway, hasn't there? I think they were underway, and that runs through the Kasia project. So just tell us how things are going in terms of the construction, etc.
Yeah, so that's all being done by the government and should be all completed by the end of this year. We are very, very lucky in that the rail actually touches the southern tip of the Kasia deposit. So in terms of from where we are envisaging the plant to getting our product onto the rail is only about 6 kilometers. So that would be a very small spur line. You know, it would cost us less than $10 million to put into place. And that would connect us to Nacala, which is Africa's deepest water port and, you know, is a big port with enough port handling capacity for us to get the product onto any vessel or any end terminal around the world.
What I was going to ask, the direct question, just put you on the spot again, was so when's Rio gonna make you an offer?
Look, the way we are working is this is a sprint pause. Rio, yes, is a strategic investor, and they have gone up to 19.8% and have just elected to move to 19.9%. of the project. They have been providing us with technical and marketing expertise. We do have a technical committee made up half of Rio and half of Sovereign. So a lot of their input is going into, for example, this optimization study that we're conducting. But this is a Sovereign deposit and it's a Sovereign project, and it's Sovereign that holds the keys and holds the cards and continues to move this forward.
So I want you to then give your reply to what Rick Rule said to us when we interviewed him just a few days ago, where he basically said, well, I think because Rio is involved, it's going to limit my upside. Retort, please.
Look, I'm a big fan of Rick's, but what I will say to that is a limited upside is always better than a potential downside, I guess is the key. But, you know, I don't see an upside as being limited. The only limit to the upside here really is the economics of the project. And I don't mean in terms of an NPV or a takeout or any of those. This project would be producing, you know, close to $500 million of gross profit a year for at least a quarter of a century, if not half a century. I mean, it would be the largest producer of two critical minerals. Will be the lowest cost producer of both those minerals. The fact that we have an investor like Rio on board speaks volumes to the project and its quality, I think, more than anything else.
So could you see a scenario, and to be honest, you answered the same as Rick answered, that it's better to have a situation where it really probably is only upside and really not much for downside, and based on what we know today. Obviously, things can change, but pretty unlikely now in this particular situation. But could you see that there would be some sort of offer that came on board that would have a sort of net smelter royalty type scenario? Or though it's not, obviously, you're not smelting anything, but you understand what I mean, percentage of profit or whatever for the next 25 years, whatever for Sovereign shareholders, because this would obviously add a huge amount of market cap without actually costing the buyer a huge amount of cash up front.
I think the answer to that is pretty simple. And it's, you know, what? So we, at this point in time, the way we maximize that value is by advancing the Casilla project, moving it closer and closer to production. And those are all the steps that we're taking. And that's what all our announcements over the last 12 months have indicated, that, you know, each month has been a bit of a quantum shift in moving Casilla forwards to production. And we're just going to continue doing that. Now, if Rio or any other third party was to come along and give us another option of maximizing value for our shareholders, we'd consider it. And if we thought it was worthwhile, we'd put it out there. But it's not something that, you know, we're going to speculate or opine on now. Well, our job is pretty simple. It's moving this thing forwards, and hopefully the market understands the inherent value of Casilla.
Okay, well, not answered. Tremendous. No, but I understand you can't answer it. But it also makes me think about the many possibilities that are available in terms of this, including you guys taking this all the way yourselves. It's not beyond the bounds of possibility that happens, though possibly it's stacked against you in terms of the ability of said major to want, as you said, $500 million a year on its bottom line, which would be very nice for the next foreseeable future, basically, because this project could work for the next 50 to 75 to 100 years. You know, so if they're looking long term, which most majors want revenue and profitability for the long term so they can pay those nice juicy dividends, this is exactly what they're going to be after.
If you're running Casilla, you basically locking in a market leader position in the titanium industry, the titanium feedstock industry, and the battery mineral space. So it's not a bad place to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we wish you luck, and I'm sure we'll get more and more news as time goes by and see how this plant's coming along and how the productions are coming along.
Brilliant. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, gents. Okay.
Sapan Guy, CCO of Sovereign Metals, thanks very much for your time.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.